Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. For this very special Jazz Shapers encore, we welcome back a past business shaper, Richard Hilton, founder of Gymbox, the fitness brand, and now the co-founder and CEO of Fair Game, a first-of-its-kind immersive fairground experience. Richard first joined me back in 2013. After a stint working in advertising in New York, Richard returned to London and quickly realised that UK gyms, sterile with no atmosphere and generic music, were miles behind those in New York. Driven to make gyms better, Richard launched the first Gymbox in Holborn, London, 2003, offering high-energy workouts in a nightclub setting with live music and classes like show wrestling, American football fitness and rave yoga, and I was a member for a number of years too. After 12 years of building the brand to 10 sites and over 30,000 members, Richard sold most of his stake in Gymbox and was, as he says, excited about retirement. But it wasn't to be. Drawn to the rise in competitive socialising and inspired by the waltzers and whack-a-moles at Hampstead Fair, Richard and co-founders Paul Campbell and Andrew Myers launched Fair Game in 2022 in London's Canary Wharf, an adults-only, neon, tech-enhanced indoor fairground with games, cocktails and street food. And I can testify the street food is rather delicious. It's really nice to see you. It isn't the first time I've seen you since 2013, I confess. We have caught up a fair few times, danced together. I think I had you on my shoulders at some point, and I've also gone to see Fair Game. But let's just go back. When we did chat for the first time in 2013, very different world for Richard Hilton. You were ensconced a good few years into your business, or 10 years or so. What was life like then, as you recall it? Were you thinking about, I'm going to get out of this at some point, or was it a very different headspace for you?
I think in 2013, I was still very much on the expansion trail for Gymbox. So at that point, I wasn't thinking about selling it or changing it. I was just thinking about growing the business. Funny enough, about a year later, in 2014, a new private equity house came in. And I did start thinking, okay, how big do I want to take this brand? And where do I want to be myself in a few years? So I think the sort of inflection point was in 2014, I thought, well, maybe it is time to transition the business and perhaps think about selling it. The problem was the business was so surrounded in myself that I did everything. That, you know, when I mentioned this to the private equity house, it was shock horror. Well, how can the business survive? So you have to plan getting out of these businesses. You can't do it overnight. So the plan was put in place in about 2014. I subtly changed my name from CEO to founder on my titles. And we internally promoted the sales director into the position of CEO. So it was very subtle to begin with, but it was a conscious plan from 2014 of let's get on this trajectory of me stepping back and the business moving on.
But for someone who had created this business because they're a bit of a rebel, bit of a naughty boy, Richard, not quite unteachable, but I imagine tricky in the classroom, for someone who kind of was always going to run his own thing and then created his own thing, you know, that, and as you said, you were synonymous with Gymbox. That being a bit more grown up and getting a bit structured and bringing in people and looking like a serious business to private equity and whoever else, that must have been a bit of a gear change.
I think that was part of the reason that I wanted to sell it, was in the early days, it's all about creating havoc and creating a rebel brand and upsetting the status quo. And then when you're into a multi-million pound business, it becomes a lot more systemized. And I think I started realizing the systemization of the business wasn't what I enjoyed doing. What I enjoyed doing was the marketing and creating the brand and creating trouble.
Did you, though, even though you say the systemized bit wasn't what you wanted to do, obviously 10 years in, that business was running pretty well, I imagine.
Yeah, the systems were in place and it was running smoothly. And, you know, even the best creative brands in the world have strong systems, you know, and a strong setup. So the systems were there. I just found from my own personal enjoyment, you know, the halcyon days I felt were a little bit behind me in terms of the risks you could take and the fun that we were having. So it started becoming a bit more routine. And as soon as it became routine for me is the day I realized, well, maybe it's time for me to step back. And I was also conscious that while the business was worth quite a lot of money, unfortunately I wasn't, because it was all tied up in the business.
Stay with me to find out much more about what happened to Richard Hilton and the money transferring from the business to him, maybe. We'll soon find out. This is a Jazz Shapers Encore special. He's the founder of Gymbox, co-founder of Fair Game. And we were talking about a kind of an inflection point, as you said, around 2014, where you were honest with yourself. And I think that's a really big part of this, going, I like creating, I am rebellious, I like the marketing, but the systems, they're in place, but it's not for me. Once you've made that decision, though, Richard, how do you kind of keep the focus? Because there's a couple of years gestation. Are you then, because I've read a couple of, you've said a lot of things, you were recently interviewed in the Times, and you go, you know, if you set the business up just to make money, you're in trouble. But at that point, there is a financial end game, and you have done the hard yards. So how did you keep focused on what was still important in the business?
I think the way I always looked at it is, if you do what's right for the business will do what's right by you. So even though I felt I wanted to transition and realise the equity value, I was still conscious of the fact that, A, I didn't know the timings, and B, I was leaving sort of the baby to my management team, who I had a lot of friendship with and respect for. So I didn't want to leave the business in any worse position than as if I was running it.
Was it hard leaving the baby?
No, I found it surprisingly easy. So what I realise is, as much as I loved the business and loved creating the business, I didn't have a strong emotional attachment. So the day the sale went through, which was a process in itself, and it's quite a dramatic experience selling a business in terms of, you know, the journey you go on. But I never looked back for one day with regrets, thinking, I wish I'd held on to it.
And then there's that moment when the money is in the account. And, you know, I don't often ask, it's people don't like to talk about money, and I'm not interested in amounts. So it was more than £10.50, I'm sure. But when you look at that, do you go, that's what this is about? Do you go, that's nice? Do you just kind of go, okay, and move on? I mean, where's the headspace when you actually realise it's gone through?
Well, in the process of getting it there, I thought it was genuinely going to change me. So once that money was in the bank, I would be a happy-go-lucky person, and the relationship with my wife would be absolutely perfect, because we had nothing to argue about anymore. The reality is slightly different. So initially, yes, there's this huge relief, and it's like taking off this wet coat that you don't need to worry about money anymore. You don't need to sweat on school fees or worry about the cost of a meal, and that pressure is off. So there's an initial delight, but then there's a realization or a dawning of, well, what do I do with myself now? And I'd spent so long creating the business, driving the business, giving my all to the business, and it's not a 9-to-5 when you have your own business. It's 24/7. And I always say it was like a tap. It was running full speed, and then it literally just turns off. And then you've got this vacuum of time to fill.
And how did you start filling the time?
So initially I thought, I'll spend it with playing a bit of golf, spend more time with the wife and kids. And I realised that there's only so much golf you can play with octogenarians.
Well, I did read you wanted to be a professional golfer, which I didn't know until I'd... Was that for like a 30-second moment?
Yeah, I think that was, and that was when, the age of my teenage years. And Unfortunately, anyone who's played golf with me realised that was never going to happen, except in my brain. So initially, I played a bit more golf and spent some more time with the wife and kids. But the reality is, my wife didn't want me there. The kids didn't want me there. So you end up in this sort of strange space of, what do you do with your time? And I think, if for me at least, I wasn't prepared for it, because I'd always sort of thought, don't curse it. Don't think about what you're going to do after the transaction. Just get the sale done and then figure it out afterwards. So I was completely unprepared for that life event.
And was there a moment when you went, what's my purpose? Was there that? Because obviously when you're so absorbed for 13 years in a pursuit, and you're a very single-minded person.
There's definitely, there's a little bit of that. So it is, you know, you spend a lot of time walking the dog and, you know, have an active mind. So if my mind's not engaged with business, once business is gone, you're saying, well, what is this all about? What am I going to do? And your mind sort of goes into areas that, frankly, you don't really want it to go into.
We'll find out where his mind went, maybe, if he tells me. It's my business shape today. It's Richard Hilton, founder of Gymbox and co-founder at Fair Game. He'll be coming back in a couple of minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Mishcon Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. In this instance, Natasha Knight invites business founders to share their industry insights and practical advice for those of you thinking of starting your very own thing. In this clip, focused on entering the arts industries, we hear from Fabian Riggle. He was the founder of Secret Cinema and now the founder of Lost.
The Mishcon Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Mishcon Dorea.
I never raised any capital at the beginning. It was always about basically putting the tickets on sale, the money would come in, and then we'd spend it on the show, which is always a bit of a risky way. Most theatre producers or, you know, film producers will raise the capital from investors and then, you know, build the shows. But we, the actual audience, were always investing in the shows, and it gave us that freedom to not have to like compromise. For a long time, we never had to answer to anyone. We just created the show. And that's the thing I would say to anyone who's got a good idea, is it's critical to make sure that you do your thing and you don't get too compromised by the money that comes in. Now it's a very exciting time because essentially everything is up for reinvention, and including the way that artists release work and how that work is owned. To any budding entrepreneur, make sure that you legally understand what you're doing. The management system, the label system, the representation system, the ownership of the masters or the ownership of your film. Yeah, things are shifting. And I think it's just extraordinary the resource that you have now to build an enterprise, or, you know, you can literally, with 1,000 people that follow you, you can create a business. So that's just your family, your friends, and then times five.
The Mishcon Innovation Series. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Mishcon Dorea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishcon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast. And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today is Richard Hilton, founder of Gymbox, the fitness brand, and the co-founder and CEO of Fair Game, the immersive fairground experience. So I kind of got in my head that there's this person existing called Richard Hilton. He's done the big thing. He's feels really lucky, feels really blessed that things have worked out. But he's a tad bored. And he's sort of wondering what he's going to do next. At what point did the idea for Fair Game start formulating in your head?
It happened gradually. And I think boredom was the right word. You feel incredibly sort of blessed that this event happened. And then you're sort of saying, OK, but what's the next step?
Especially as you said, the tap's been turned off and you've been at it. And you've got 100 things that you do every day. Yeah. So then you're going down to, what time do I walk the dog?
Yeah, and I'm 45 years of age.
Which is young.
And you realise once you've raided the fridge three times during lunchtime and watched an hour's Judge Judy, this is not what life is about.
This is not your life. Yeah. What am I going to do next? There's not another episode of Judge Judy. So sorry, the idea started forming.
So the idea starts sort of forming, and then another competitive socializing business asked me to come in and would I entertain being chairman of their business. And competitive socializing, which essentially is, you know, an activity while people eat and drink, was relatively new. Anyway, I went into the business and was sort of blown away. It was full of people, and they showed me the numbers, and the numbers were great. And I was quite excited about this idea of doing something in this sector. And that sort of got me thinking, and had various conversations with Paul and Andrew and said, okay, what could we do? Golf is done, darts is being done. Is there something unique out there which is really special, which has a, and what I liked about sort of golf was it had a sense of the nostalgia. But is there something nostalgic but could be different? So every game could be different and varied. And we were having this conversation for about a period of a year. And then at some point, there was a light bulb moment. And I think it was probably started by, we went to the fair with the kids, an outdoor fairground. And while it's sort of not what you want from a business, because it's a bit grotty and down market. And it's
muddy.
And it's always raining, you're absolutely right. And the rides are really, the activities are really short because they're there to basically get as many people through them as quickly as you can. But if you take a step back and you look at those, the games, the shooting game or the basketball game, you actually think the games are brilliant, but nobody's ever taken them indoors, put tech behind them so you can make it competitive and you've got live scoreboards, and surrounded it with great food and drink. And it was simple as that. As soon as we thought, okay, is there something in this? We're on this path of, this is either madness or it's genius.
But that is very you, Richard, in the sense that Gymbox was the same thing. You seem to have these moments. It may not be an epiphany, but there's a thing that goes, well, that would be kind of interesting. Have you always been like that ever since you can remember?
I think I've always had a naturally inquisitive mind. And I like thinking, well, how could something be improved? So when you looked at the gym business, how could you improve on what was already existing?
But as a kid, though, I mean, what, you know, we before Gymbox, when you were, you know, going through school, and I think you were a boarder as well. I mean, did those, were there performative moments that made Richard this sort of, I don't know if what's in front of me is very interesting. I think maybe I need to smash it up a bit.
Well, yes and no. So as a, you know, as a student, I was utterly forgettable with all my teachers. I don't think anyone would ever remember me. And I sort of made a conscious decision. It wasn't unconscious. It was a conscious decision at the age of about 14, where I knew in my brain I wasn't going to go to university because I couldn't quite figure out, A, I wasn't academic, and B, I couldn't figure out how I was going to apply this into later life. So I was quite sort of steadfast in my view of, I don't want to do the university route. Ironically, since I've now had kids, that's the total opposite of what I want for them. But I wasn't a natural creative with ideas constantly sparking. It was, I sort of had a feeling of what I wanted to do, and I was quite immovable. So if I wanted to go down a path, I was quite strong on that view. But it wasn't like I was this maverick when I was a child. Mm.
Did risk ever enter your mind? Or was it more of a compulsion that I'm not going to sit here watching Judge Judy?
So I'm probably not wired right when it comes to risk. So when I look at a business or doing an opportunity, I think that the chances of success with me doing it are minimised, where the reality is...
Do you? So you really back yourself?
I back myself, but not in an arrogant way, because I'm pretty sure I will get it wrong at some point, which is also actually another thing which I think is actually a strength, because I'm always slightly paranoid that I'm going to get it wrong. I'm always looking for protections to make sure it doesn't go wrong. So I'm constantly looking at angles and saying, all right, how do you protect if this happens or if that happens? But yeah, I think with Gymbox, I sort of finished the journey and I thought, well, okay, that worked really, really well, but was it all luck? And there was a lot of luck on that journey. So there was a sort of a nagging doubt in my head of saying, well, were you good at what you did or was it luck? And the reality is, when you look at it, I ran the business for 15 years or thereabouts, so it couldn't have been luck for 15 years.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So you're being pretty tough on yourself there.
But then I thought, well, can you do it again? Or was the idea a lucky idea?
It's just key. You're just going, look, Richard, you're just a failure, right? Let's be clear. There's nothing in it. Where does that come from? You're hard on yourself.
I think it comes from, I wanted to prove it to myself again. Hmm. So I said, okay, can you do it again? And not only can you do it again, can you do it in a completely different sector? Because doing it in the gym business is, you've done it. I was tired of the gym sector.
But where does that come from, joking aside? Where does that desire to prove it to yourself? Because, you know, you, again, looking from the outside, I don't know you've got anything to prove. And yet something's telling you, you've got to go again. You've got to make sure it's clear that there is some inherent talent in there rather than forces conspired positively.
Well, you've got to do something with your time. So... The way I was looking at it was, if I'm not challenging myself and trying to do another business, what am I going to do? So I think part of it was, you know, I was 45 years of age when I sold Gymbox. Took 9 months to a year out. I'm still relatively young. So let's throw another challenge. And I still felt young and I still felt I wanted to try it again. And the alternative of sitting around the house and driving everyone mad wasn't that attractive to me.
Did you feel better immediately you had a plan, that you started building something? Is that when you go into a different space mentally?
Yeah, I think I go into a more sort of focused mindset and I have a different energy about me. So if I'm around the house, I'm like everyone else. You sort of relax and you watch a bit of TV. But when I'm doing work, I'm actually probably at my best in terms of motivated, excited, engaging. I think I've come to the conclusion I really enjoy it. Although I have promised myself I won't do it again. This will be the last business. But
I don't believe you. My wife doesn't think
I will ever retire either.
You're not convincing me. I don't think retiring is an option for you. Stay with me for my final chat with Richard Hilton. He'll be back in a moment. We've also got some Gabriels for you as well. That's coming up here on Jazz FM.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
I am with Richard Hilton just for a few more minutes here on Jazz Shapers. The thing I haven't mentioned today yet, and I want to talk about it, is you and the way you've built teams. And you know the fact that Gymbox, big team, lots of humans. And yes, there's the tech in Fair Game, but actually having visited with you, and I wasn't joking, the food was excellent. This is not a commercial, but it was really, really tasty. You know everyone, and I know you've got one site at the moment, and I'm sure there's going to be more. But your vibe with that team seems important to you. Tell me a little bit about what you enjoy about building teams still, second time round.
I think any business is only as good as the people. And I've always tried to create a positive culture. And, you know, the thinking is very, very simple. If people enjoy coming to work, then your customers and your members, when it was a gym, would thrive off that. So I've always tried to lead by getting to know who works in the business, trying to make their journey, for however long or short they want it to be, an enjoyable experience, and to try and lead with a bit of positivity and compassion.
On the other side of that, there's standards and there's stuff that needs to be done, and there's Richard Hilton's attention to detail. You know, the taps have to be right, sinks, the signage, colours, the logos, the experience, the tech, the user interface, everything. How do you balance that? How do you ensure that you get people that go, yeah, I love the compassion and all that, but actually I know I've got to deliver at a very high level, always?
I don't think high standards fly in the face of a positive culture. So I think standards always have to be any business I want it to be. I want it to be perfect.
Why is that actually out of interest? Where's this drive for perfection? Because I sense from you, and we know each other anyway, but your focus is... it's pretty unusual, Richard. I mean, I meet lots of people who have done what you do and their focus is pretty unusual. Why is it so focused on the attention to detail, on the next challenge? What's the driver?
Every aspect of that business, I want it to be as good as it can be, whether it's the culture, whether it's the cleanliness, whether it's the food, whether it's the drinks, because I think ultimately that is what is going to create the best business and the best experience for our customers. And I think if the customers see a light bulb out, it may not register there's a light bulb out, but something in their subconscious registers that this business isn't quite on top of things. So I take it very personally that I want nothing scratched, nothing damaged, people wearing the right uniform, people to be happy and positive. And I think it's ultimately the best businesses are the ones that keep their focus on the attention to detail.
And just finally, before we're going to run out of time, and I'm going to ask you what your song choice is, but just thinking about, you know, the honesty, you said, you know, I got the money and it didn't make me happy. When, through the journey of the cycles of the business, when are you at your happiest? When have you got that moment of joy, despite the natural paranoia that ensures that you are addressing things? You know, when do you actually go, okay, I'm feeling pretty good about this? Because I don't hear you say it very much, but I know you want to have a positive culture and I know you want your customers or your members, as it was, to enjoy themselves.
So I think my ultimate joy is the day before they open. So when everything looks absolutely perfect and the marketing is exactly how I want it to be and the design is on point and the staff are happy and motivated, that is probably my highlight. And the day it opens and people come in and they mess around with the detail and change bits and pieces, it starts waning for me a little bit. And then it's about, now I've done my part, hand it on to the operational team and let's get on with the next venue.
I forget the name of the philosopher, but it's something like, football's a very simple game made complicated by the opposition. It's the sort of that thing. If they only weren't there, everything would be perfect. You are an idealist after all. It's been lovely talking to you again. And thank you for coming back and being so honest about Journey version 2. I'm sure there will be another journey. I think your wife is right. I think you will be going again. But only time will tell.
Thank you.
You'll still be a young person in another 5 years. Just before I let you go, what's your song choice? Why have you chosen it?
It's The Bird by Charlie Parker, and I chose it because when I was living in New York in the 1990s, my father gave me a few jazz CDs, and Charlie Parker was the one I gravitated to the most.
Charlie Parker there with The Bird, the song choice of my business shaper today, Richard Hilton. He talked about liking to create havoc, but also, of course, as the businesses develop, the importance of systems to underpin the havoc. He talked about his own sense of paranoia about getting it wrong and how that has driven him. And I love this thought, this point about loving the moment, the day before they open, in his case, things that are for the public. He loves that sense of perfection, and boy, does that drive him. Great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/jazzshapers.